This is In Focus on News Radio 1350 KMAN.
And welcome to In Focus here on News Radio KMAN. I'm Brandon Peoples. Today we are joined by Captain Tim Hegarty with the Raleigh County Police Department. He's in the Investigations Division. Captain Hegarty, we're glad to have you in here today.
Thank you, Brandon.
So, busy start to the year here for you. You guys just had your first law board meeting of the year. I know you were there. Talk about what's been new here for the police department in 2019. Obviously, you have the new director.
Well, what hasn't been new? That's an easier question to answer, and then the answer is nothing. Everything has been new. So it's a very different time. We haven't had this, obviously, since 2000. When Mike Watson, deputy chief from Wichita, was hired as the director. So, you know, someone coming in from the outside, although he had ties to the area. But when Director Schoen was hired in 07, he was an internal. So it was, the transition was a bit easier, I suppose, more comfortable on everybody. So it's a getting to know people process.
I had a chance to speak to Director, but he seems like a pretty nice guy. He's very outgoing, and from everything I've gathered so far, he's been well-received by the police department.
I think that's the case. He's got a lot of reading on his desk, a lot of electronic reading, you know, someone coming in from the outside who's never been involved with the consolidated agency. That's a challenge. Someone who hasn't been in charge of an agency of this size, that's a challenge. Now, he originally came from, I believe it was the Alexandria Police Department, which is a good-sized police department. But as chief in Ottawa, it was much smaller, had about 29 officers. So there's a lot of adjustments, him getting to know us getting to know him. It'll happen. I mean, we're less than a month in, so... It's asking a lot for a lot to be happening right now. So it's kind of slow going.
Sure. Well, as far as we have some other things to talk about here today as well, but this time of year is usually, as I understand, when you guys kind of talk about the year in review here, 2018. As far as crime statistics, yeah, I don't know if you wanted to highlight some of that.
Well, yeah, those will be presented to Law Board next month. There was some good and there was some bad. It was a mixed bag. Overall, the main crimes that we count, the Part 1 crimes, which is murder, rape, robbery, aggravated assault, burglary, larceny, and auto theft, overall, that was down about 7% from 2017. So that's good. And particularly good is that residential burglaries dropped about 30-35%. Vehicle burglaries dropped about 27%. So that's the good. The bad is that, you know, rape increased, reported rape increased, robberies increased, and aggravated assaults increased. So the violent crime increased by smaller percentage numbers because those are more infrequent. So, for example, and we've got the numbers in front of me, take aggravated assault, for example. An increase of 7 leads to a 7% increase because there's relatively few of those. Robbery, an increase of 6 leads to a 26% increase. So everything is relative. Overall, it was a safer year for the city of Manhattan and Raleigh County, both when it comes to crime and when it comes to traffic accidents. So that's good news. I would like to think we had a little bit to do with it, but it's always a community effort when things go well.
And how do you – I know those numbers will fluctuate. I mean, you could have – they could skyrocket again next year, but how often do those numbers fluctuate each from year to year?
Well, it really depends. A lot of crime is stranger crime. In fact, the bulk of crime, if you wanted to isolate one hot spot where more crime occurs than any place else, and I won't name the store, but that's where it happens. because we're talking about theft, you know, larceny, shoplifting. That happened, that kind of crime happens more than any other type of crime. Now, obviously, that's not the serious violent crime that, that hurts people, but it's a crime, and we deal with that. If you want to talk about the where the most violent crime happens, I think most people can probably guess where that area is, in and around Aggieville. And there's lots of reasons for that, and I think that makes a lot of sense. But in terms of dealing with those fluctuations, let's take structural burglary, residential burglary, for example. There was a spike in 2017, and we wanted to do something about that. So we instituted some proactive measures for our police officers that were designed to address residential burglary and vehicle burglary. And so we had huge drops in those areas. Now, that's correlation. That's not causation. But we'd like to think that that change had something to do with that. So we're doing things purposefully when a certain type of crime spikes. We look at what the research says about what works to address that, and then we implement those things and track any changes. And the hope is that it pays off, and sometimes it does. It did this year in certain instances. When it comes to aggravated assault, for example, it's a bit tougher nut to crack because oftentimes it's stranger. It's spread throughout the city. I mean, you might think, well, yeah, Aggieville, that's where most of it happens. No, that's not necessarily the case. You get a lot of road rage. Someone pulls out a gun and points at it. That's an aggravated assault. Threatening someone with a baseball bat, that type of thing. A lot of it's domestic related. So that's really tougher to get a handle on. And there are bits and pieces of it that we can work on, the domestic side of it. We're looking at some intimate partner violence initiatives to address that. But there are some that are very difficult from a policing standpoint. Now, from a community standpoint, and that's where real solutions lie, is when everybody's involved in the process. Because crime prevention is a community-wide problem. For example, we don't have city sanitation here, but many cities do. So if in a city where there was city sanitation, if someone says, you know what, littering, trash is not my problem, we've got a city sanitation unit, takes care of it, you'd probably have a city that's fairly unclean. Mm-hmm. So if you have a community that says to itself, you know, crime is not our problem, police department can handle that. It's probably going to be a less safe community than one in which says, crime is everybody's business, whether it means reporting it or being active in preventing it at your own house or your own business or taking part on community panels or joining the Citizens Advisory Board or running for office because you want to advocate for some type of multidisciplinary approach to a problem. I mean, those are things that strong crime-free communities do.
I think most people, I mean, we're not okay with crime, but the crime we don't want to see growing is the violent crimes. And there was something this week at the law board meeting. There was a new position that's being implemented. I think you touched on it briefly here just a moment ago. But the
victim advocate coordinator. Yeah,
that's right.
And what this position is designed to do, and it's grant-funded primarily. We're on the hook for 8.5% of the salary benefits for this position. It's initially designed to work with some initiatives to reduce intimate partner violence and sexual assaults and handle victim services and coordinate those services and coordinate victims being informed about the case process, the investigation process, being that link between the victim and the detective who's working that case, because the detective can't always be in that position to help out the victim in ways other than investigating the crime.
All right. We got a phone call here. Good morning. You're on In Focus.
Yeah, good morning. I have a couple items, and I will stay on the line and may have a further question. Number one, we put the cell phone deal in, the only city in the state, a few years ago. How many arrests do you think we made the first year and compared to now? As I understand it, it's not being enforced very strongly, except for fishing expeditions. But anyway, I see people every place talking on the cell phone. I see them sitting in a car at a stop sign right beside a policeman talking on their cell phone. So apparently we're not observing it. Second question is, we had a lawsuit here recently about DUI requirements or quotas. And I understand that that was found there were DUI quotas, and maybe some officers left the force because of that. Could you comment on that? Because it doesn't seem to be coming out of the paper. Maybe if you give it out to the listening public, who hears it all over the nation on KMAN, then we can know what's going on. And I'll stay on the line and listen.
All right, well, there are a couple of comments that I can make about that. So when the hands-free ordinance was first passed, I was the patrol division commander. So I can tell you we wrote a significant number of tickets for those offenses. To be honest, has decreased. I can't tell you by how much. And as someone who drives around the town just like you do, I see the same things that you do. And, to be honest, we probably could do a better job of enforcing that because you're right, it is everywhere. But seeing something and being able to do something safely about it sometimes is two different things. I can specifically recall, and this officer who's now a detective may be listening, so I'm going to remind him of this. He saw a cell phone violation going the opposite direction. And this was when I was patrol commander. So he turned on his emergency equipment and turned around. And this was on the Wildcat Bridge over Sethchild and got into an accident. So frequently we see violations of all kinds. But we're in a very bad position to take enforcement. Now, that's not excusing any drop in that type of enforcement. Because, as I said, I'll acknowledge it. That has fallen off. By how much, I don't know. That part I wasn't prepared to address. As far as the DUI goes, no, we don't have any DUI quotas, and we've never had. Occasionally, we've had targeted goals. Again, back a number of years when I was patrol commander, we did set a specific goal for the year for DUIs, and we met that goal. But in hindsight, I would not do that over again because I think that's the wrong way to go about that. But we've never had individual officer quotas. Now, we have, on a regular case, told officers that we would like from them X number of, and I'll use a term that one of the supervisors uses, forced contacts. And forced is kind of a misnomer. It means that the officer initiates some type of contact with a citizen rather than the citizen calling in. And that could be a vehicle stop. It could be getting out and walking on foot and talking to somebody on sitting on a porch. So the goal was to get our officers interacting with people rather than driving around all day, wasting fossil fuels, waiting for someone to call us. So DUI quotas, absolutely not. Quotas for activity, proactivity is what we call. Yeah, occasionally that is the case. But there is a wide range of proactivity. As a matter of fact, we have a strategy now. It's similar to, we call it playbook. So officers have these plays that they run. And some plays are tied to enforcement, like traffic. Some plays are tied to citizen engagement and improving the engagement with citizens. So there's a wide variety of things officers can do to be proactive, but our goal is to push them and to train them and to mentor them to be proactive because, going back to the safe communities, that's how you have a safe community, when you have your officers who are proactive, not only in enforcing the law, but engaging people and building and establishing relationships and trust.
Okay, I understand what all you said there. Can you comment on the status of the lawsuit of the officer that left because he thought he was threatened because of the quotas? So there was not quotas maybe you can't comment on that case, but that has to come to probation at some point and be decided. Has it gone to court yet?
I can't comment, number one, because I don't know about it, and number two, because, as you said, it is a lawsuit. But when it is concluded, a good portion of it will be made public. It'll be open. Now, you know, what the outcome is, sometimes if things are settled, the settlement isn't revealed, and I don't know what's going to happen in this case. I can just tell you that there aren't DUI quotas. There never have been in my nearly 24 years, and I don't think there ever will be.
Also, a very good question. What is the status of the assistant director and director's wife suddenly retiring July 1? The Mercury doesn't seem to have anything about that. And to inquiring to them, they said they can't find out. Is that ever going to be made public, or is that just a secret?
You would have to make that inquiry to the chairman of the law board, because that was something that was initiated by the law board. And so we in the police department, rank and file on up, we're in the same position as you are.
Wouldn't that be a personnel matter that falls under confidential issues?
It may very well be. That may be the tack they take. There are certain things that can be reported. They may choose not to report anything. That's the law board decision. And it's entirely up to them and their legal counsel.
All right. Well, we got to take a break now, but we'll come back with more from Captain Tim Haggerty here on In Focus. You're listening to News Radio KMAN.
KMAN Morning News is sponsored by ESB Financial.